welcome, friends, to this month's edition of The Shepherd's Voice with the Bishop of Trenton, Bishop David M. O'Connell. Good to have you back, Bishop.
Thanks very much, Jim. Hello, everybody. Good to be with you.
And Happy New Year. I haven't seen you since before the New Year.
My New Year didn't get off to such a great start.
No, I know, but thanks be to God.
At this point, yeah.
You saw the Holy Father twice, though.
I did. I went over to Rome for a pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And I left on New Year's Day with my secretary, Father Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get over there a little bit ahead of the pilgrimage. I like to go beforehand just to check, make sure everything is taken care of. We have a wonderful director of pilgrimages who has her own travel agency now, Journeys of Faith, Carolyn Norbert. She's a associate director of the Office of Worship, but she started a few years ago dabbling in pilgrimages and travel and so on, and she does a marvelous job. I mean, she just did a great, great job in a number of parishes, both in our diocese and in other dioceses, are starting to, you know, contract with her for pilgrimages. And I'll tell you, even though this pilgrimage was disrupted once it got started for me, the priest who went, this was a priest pilgrimage, really thought it was terrific. They had a great time. And as I say, I went over a little bit early. I like to just make sure everything is set. And I stayed in the hotel, the Michelangelo Hotel, which is very close to the...
Oh, yeah, we stayed there. Very nice.
Nice hotel.
Oh, beautiful, yeah.
And they renovated it completely.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah. And so, within walking distance.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And... I said to my secretary, I said, well, let's go over to the Basilica, St. Peter's, and take a walk around. And we did, and get a chance before the crowd came to see everything. And although Father Jean had been there before to Rome, really to show him some things. You know, when you travel to Rome as a bishop, a lot of doors open that are... not easily opened for others, simply because you are a bishop and successor to the apostles. So we were able to walk around, to tour around, to pray in the chapel there for the Blessed Sacrament and go visit the tombs of the popes, which I always enjoy. It brings back my church history as I look at each name. And beautiful, give me a chance for the first time, really, since Pope Benedict died, to visit his... tomb.
Now, is he downstairs?
He's downstairs. He's actually in the tomb that John Paul II was in.
Mm-hmm.
And when they moved John Paul II upstairs, he got that tomb. And it was beautiful, covered with some flowers. And gave me a chance to pray there at his tomb. You know, Pope Benedict was the one who appointed me to be bishop. And I had known him for many, many years, both as Pope and before. More often, my contact with him was before as Cardinal. You know, once you become a Pope, it puts you in a whole different world, in a sense. So we had a nice visit, and then we went to visit one of my favorite restaurants over in Rome, which is on the Borgo Pio, not far from there. Arlu is the name of it. Have you ever been there?
I don't know if I've been to that one, but we've been at restaurants on the Borgo Pio.
Yeah, that's a great restaurant. And owner Armando, I've known him for a zillion years. So he was very happy to greet me and welcome me. We had a nice meal. And then by that time, Monsignor Gervasio and Monsignor Siriani and Father Daniel Pirano had joined us. They came a little bit early before the pilgrimage. So we enjoyed lunch. We did a little touring. Then the next day, we went over to the Pantheon, and of course, there's another restaurant that I like from to me, Rome's restaurants.
Listen, you can't beat it, right?
Great places to eat, and
and
I had gone earlier in the day to the audience to greet the Pope, and we had a very, very nice visit. There were only three of us, two retired bishops and me. We're with the Pope on the stage, you know.
It was Paul VI.
Paul VI. We were inside. And Father Jean, who had never met the Pope, was in the front row. They seated him in the front row. So we had a good could chat, you know, in the, even though the Pope doesn't speak English.
I was going to ask, but he does speak a little
bit. We
were
able to communicate, you know, with words. That, you know, he speaks, of course, Spanish and Italian, and I know a little bit of both, not much, but we were able to communicate and have a nice visit. And the Christmas decorations were up because Epiphany had not yet taken place.
Right.
As one of the reasons why I wanted to get there early was because I had arranged for all of our priests. We had about 21 priests going over. I had made arrangements with them to kind of celebrate with the Holy Father.
Oh, wow.
For the Mass of Epiphany, which I had done once before with the priest pilgrimage. So I got everything ready and had the nice visit with the Holy Father and went out to lunch with the three other priests who had joined. And I was in this restaurant, Da Fortunato, near the Pantheon. It's a really fine place. I've been going there for a million years. And as I finished lunch, I started to feel a little pain in my shoulder blade, my left shoulder blade. And it didn't strike me as unusual because I had had some problems with my neck, with my vertebrae in my neck, and it sent the pain to the shoulder blade before. And so I had pills for that. Went back to the hotel, took a gabapentin is the name of the medication. It's a painkiller and a lot of other things. And then I just said, well, I said to my secretary, I'm just going to lay down on the bed. I'll see you later. So he left. I laid down in the bed, and it was like a saw went through my chest.
Really?
It was like I was cut in half. It was so painful. So I got up from bed, and I went across the hall and knocked on the door. I said, John, I'm having a heart attack. Call an ambulance. So the ambulance came very quickly, and I went to the Santo Spirito Hospital, which is 5 minutes right down the street from the...
Yeah, it's right on the river there, right?
Yeah, and the doctor who was in the ambulance, there was a doctor in the ambulance and a nurse, he knew what it was right away, and we got there very quickly and didn't even have to wait. We went through the emergency room like lightning. He knew exactly what was wrong, and he took me right up to the operating room, and I had the surgery and the stent put in.
There was a blockage.
100% blockage. It was the Widowmaker.
Wow.
The lower left.
Wow.
And I didn't know. I had no symptoms. No, never had any symptoms at all.
Right.
So I was very, very fortunate because with the Widowmaker, time is essential. And you could see there was a video screen, so you could watch the whole procedure. I didn't. They didn't give me a general anesthetic. They gave me just a local anesthetic on the arm, and they went through the arm up into the heart, and so I could watch it on the TV. You know,
I don't know if I'd want to watch that.
I don't know. Yeah, right. Well, of course, I'm a news bag. I've been just watching every little detail of it, and I could see the blockage, and I could see the tube going in, and I could see them undo the blockage. I could see when the blockage. Freed up, and they put a stent in there. And I stayed in the hospital. I went to the intensive care unit for a couple of days and cardiac care unit. So I missed all of the activities I had planned for this pilgrimage, along with Carolyn Norbert, the director, and got out the afternoon before the general audience. So I went back because that was the audience I had worked with the nuncio to prepare, make sure our guys had front row and access, and went to the audience, and there were only two other bishops on the stage again, both retired. It must have been retirees week at the Vatican. So when the Holy Father came out and he saw me, he goes, again? So we had a chuckle over that. He was in a very good, kind of a happy, jokey sort of a mood. And we talked a little bit, and then I showed him where our priests were sitting, and he waved, and then the audience was over. He finished his talk, and the gentleman of His Holiness guided me down to where my priests were sitting, and then he said, come. So he brought all the priests around, and they went up on the steps. And then the Holy Father, who was in a wheelchair, and he went down to greet some people, and then he came back to our group. And as he approached us, he goes, Trenton, Trenton, Trenton. Big smile on his face, and he shook everybody's hand.
Oh, nice.
Posed for a picture. So it was really lovely. And my secretary is Haitian, so he speaks Creole. So the Holy Father greeted him in Creole.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, so it was really nice. Wow. Everybody got their pictures, and it was wonderful. And we had a nice, nice day. So despite my inconvenience, the priest who went had a really great time. I didn't get to see Carlo Acutis, which I was looking forward to.
Right.
To seeing and his body, you know.
And where is that? Is that
in, that's in Assisi.
It's in Assisi, that's
it's
right.
It's in the Basilica in Assisi. The Basilica in Assisi is named, I think, St. Mary Major, just like the one in Rome. And that was it, and we had a good time. I'd asked for three banquets during the time we were there so the priests could be together, then the rest of the time they were on there. It was really a very, very pleasant time.
Very nice.
Very good. And for me, it was, a retreat in a way. This hospital is the oldest hospital in Europe, 726. And one of its chaplains at one time was St. Philip Neri.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
So, I mean, his body was just down the street. And I had hoped to go there, too, because we have the oratory of St. Philip Neri here in our diocese in Red Bank. But I didn't get a chance to do that, so... Basically, I saw the Pope, I ate, and I laid in a hospital bed. How I spent my first 2 weeks of the new year.
Yeah.
It came home, and there was damage done to the heart. You know, and I still feel a little flutter every once in a while, a little pinch there.
And but, as a result of anything in particular, or just?
Well, my doctor said... that he was not surprised, which comment surprised me when he made it. And he said, well, you're high risk because you're diabetic and you had your leg removed, you had some vascular issues then, and you have a number of issues. He says, plus you're old.
Thanks, not that old.
Thanks, Doc.
But still in your 60s, so you're not
69.
That old. I know, I know.
But... He said that I will always be at risk because of the diabetes. Diabetes is insidious disease. You know, it affects different people in different ways. You know, and the heart is one of the areas that it does attack with some people. Anyway, that's enough about me.
Well, people, I'm sure people appreciate you sharing that with them.
Me? It was in all the Catholic newspapers.
I know it was national. You were national news, international news.
And I met people. On the pilgrimage after I got out of the hospital, who asked me how I was feeling. I had no idea. These were people from Ohio and people from all over the country. So it was in the news, and I was...
Maybe it was a slow news week.
It was a slow news week. I didn't understand it, and I why it was such news, but it was.
It was. I know. I remember reading it in the Register.
I had some friends who were journalists who were in Rome at the time, so I had a chance to visit with them. You know, I had a couple. Another thing I like to do when I travel to Rome, which is not frequently anymore, used to be very frequently, is I'll make appointments with different curia offices. And, you know, you always have business, you know, the Office of Worship or the clergy office, or one of these officers. So I had made a bunch of appointments, none of which I was able to keep. So I guess I'll have to go back.
Well, I listen. Why not?
I won't rush back, though.
No. A memory you'll always have, though. But it's good to hear your
weather.
Oh, yeah. That's
the weather was very, very nice. And as I say, it was easy, even though I'm slow walking. It's easy to get to everything that I...
Now, do you use any... I know because there's so much cobblestone there. Do you use any...
No, I don't use a cane. I usually hold on to the arm of my secretary if there's some unsteadiness. But there wasn't a whole lot of that. As I say, we walked down to St. Peter's, and for the audience, you know, I had the group with me. But and the guards right away stopped everybody till they saw my red beanie, and they and they passed us right through, so everybody got in.
Yeah,
it was great. It was just a great time.
Yeah, very good. And Holy Father. Well, now he—I guess he was in the hospital. Went to the hospital himself Wednesday.
He looked fine. Actually, he was. I had remarked to a number of people, he seemed more cheerful than he usually does. Yeah. Usually he's kind of serious.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking, at least from my vantage point, when I have opportunities to meet with him, but he was really laughing and in just very, very good spirit.
Mm-hmm. But is he in a wheelchair all the time now, or just for certain?
In a wheelchair, yeah. He would get up to move to the seat, you know, to the white seat that he sits in, but he was pretty much confined to the wheelchair throughout the whole, both audiences. You know, there was someone moving him around in the wheelchair.
Right. Yeah. But I know he went in for diagnostic testing, they said, on Wednesday, because he had a mild flu symptoms and things. I don't know what the result of those were. But.
Yeah, he had a flu. He had a flu earlier, too, around that same time when I was visiting there, because he had canceled some of his appointments.
He only has one lung, right? He only has one
lung. Yeah, that's what they say, you know, or certainly part of one lung was removed.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't tell it unless... you know, he never sings, if you notice that, at Mass. He's never chanting any of the parts of the Mass. Yeah. But I've never noticed him out of breath or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he is 87, too.
You know, he's 87.
He's an older man, older than you.
He's older than me. He's old. You're old. But, he seemed okay.
Yeah. Good.
He looks to me like he maybe put on a little bit of weight.
You know, when I was watching the Christmas Eve Mass, I noticed that. He seemed heavier.
You know, he's not the celebrant of Mass.
Right.
He presides.
Mm-hmm.
He's usually in a vestment, a cope, and sits on the side, which I was surprised. I haven't seen him actually as the celebrant of Mass for a long time, a couple of years maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole issue is his knee. That's why he's not, or his hip, that he's in a wheelchair to begin with.
Yeah. He's got some problems there, too. He had some problems earlier last year with that, too.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's difficult for him to stand for any length of time. Mm-hmm. I find it that way. You know, sometimes it's not easy to stand for a long period of time.
Right.
With my amputation.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you back, and glad things are getting. You're recovering well, and
You know, the doctor told me, you know, Bishop, you keep a crazy schedule, and you really need to slow down and pace yourself a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's very difficult for me to do.
Yeah.
Not just because of the number of things, but just by nature. You know, I like to be involved with everything, and. It's just not easy to slow down. I had to cancel. I wasn't able to do any Catholic schools masses, which really killed me because I love going to the Catholic schools
and
being with the kids and the teachers and all. And a couple other things I had to cancel. But I picked up again on Ash Wednesday. I did the Ash Wednesday mass as I usually do at the cathedral. Cathedral was jammed.
On Ash Wednesday.
You know, it's usually... has a lot of people in the congregation, but it really was very
crowded. I'm curious because I know I went to Mass, of course, and the Mass I went to was very crowded over in Pennsylvania, but Cheryl's parish up in Hunterdon County, every Mass, she said, was packed.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, was it the same way down here with our parishes?
Yeah, that's the reports I got from everybody. Yeah. Everybody said their Masses were packed, and, you know, some parishes add on a Mass, and then they have... a couple services for Ash Wednesday with the readings and then the distribution of ashes. But the cathedral was very, very crowded.
Mm.
You know, at the cathedral, there's a Mass at noon.
Right.
12:10, actually. And we get a lot of the employees from the State House.
Right.
And they'll come to Mass. And there were a lot there. And really not too many left after ashes. Sometimes that happens.
Yes.
They come over, they get the ashes, and then they leave. But we didn't lose too many for the Mass.
Was that your first Mass back?
That was my first public Mass back. I celebrated on the Saturday before the funeral Mass for one of my priests, Father Monsignor Ronald Bakoven, who was the pastor at St. James in Pennington when I first came.
Mm.
Actually, I lived there with Monsignor Bakoven the first couple of months that I was here as bishop. He was a wonderful man, great man, and well-loved. Mm-hmm. And so I celebrated that Mass, and his dear friend, I guess you would say his best friend, all the way back to seminary days, preached the homily, and mm-hmm. it was very touching, very mm-hmm. moving words that he spoke. Then I did the Ash Wednesday noon, and then I went over to Monmouth University because the kids over there had asked me to come and celebrate Ash Wednesday mm-hmm. for them. Mm. There were over 400 kids.
Oh, wonderful.
At the Mass. I had a 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Uh-huh. So there were over 400 kids mm. and kids from the campus ministry there, the wonderful campus ministry at Monmouth. And yeah, it was a great visit. I just felt very encouraged by that. And actually, several of our campus ministries really report good attendance at Mass and other functions. We have, of course, the College of New Jersey mm-hmm. right here over in Ewing. Father Chris Colavito is one of his many jobs. That's mm-hmm. his job, to be the chaplain there, and he had a good turnout. We have Georgian Court mm-hmm. over in Lakewood area, and that's a Catholic, you know, it's the only Catholic college we have in the diocese, and then a few other spots around. So we really did well. Princeton University, mm-hmm. Father Zach Swantek had the Mass there. And I was scheduled to go to Princeton during that time when I was kind of home, recovering. So I was able to go there this past. I was able to change the date and go this okay. past Sunday.
Okay. And you were at the men's conference last weekend.
And the men's conference, yeah. too. Yeah, I went to that. Yeah, I haven't slowed down, have I?
No.
But the men's conference was wonderful.
Yes, I wasn't able to be there, but I understand it was very
good. Yeah, a huge turnout of guys for the men's conference, and I was able to hear confessions before and after Mass, mm-hmm. joined with the priests who were there. Yeah, it was great. Great. That's a wonderful thing. And, of course, they honored George Rose, mm-hmm. who we all remember here
sure,
on
yeah.
our programs
right,
here.
Right.
Such a good man, such yeah. a saintly man. And, yeah, Bill Maher mm-hmm. is kind of seems to have taken over the reins
yes.
of, mm-hmm. Of arranging things for mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of the man who's actually the director of it. He's new. He's been around, but he's new in that mm-hmm. position. Mm-hmm. So, but great weeks leading up to Lent, and mm-hmm. we begin the holy season of Lent.
And what's your schedule going to be like throughout Lent and into Easter?
Well, you know, March I usually begin again the yeah. spring confirmation schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at the calendar. I have about 25 confirmations coming up, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And those will stretch from March through May. I think mm-hmm. there may be one in June. And I share the confirmations with the Episcopal vicars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have auxiliary bishops.
Right.
And that was a decision that I made when I first came.
Mm-hmm.
The nuncio at the time, Archbishop Sambi, told me that I could have an auxiliary if I wanted, that I didn't have to ask, just... You know, I didn't have to get a special permission. I just have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't know what he would do, you
right.
know. So what I have are Episcopal vicars. A lot of dioceses have that. And this priest that you name, you identify, and you give them some, you delegate to them some of the responsibilities. So they serve as a personnel board. So they help me when it comes time for changes, which we're going to begin discussing soon,
mm-hmm.
and then help me out with the confirmations.
Because
mm-hmm. we have 97 parishes. Now, not all of them do confirmation every year.
Right.
Maybe 70 out of the 97 do. So I do 25, mm-hmm. about 25 confirmations in the fall and 25 in the spring, yeah. and then the four vicars will split up the rest of them and mm-hmm. help me out with that. So, and then there's parish visitations and other things that are on the schedule that have me traveling through the diocese. So yeah, I keep actually pretty active. I travel extensively through the diocese. I've been to every parish at least once in the diocese, some many more times. And we, of course, we have Holy Week coming up.
Right.
And I'll be during Holy Week be going out on Palm Sunday, which is the 24th of March. I'll be going to Colts Neck to St. Mary's Parish. And then Monday we have the Chrism Mass at 7 over at St. Robert's Co-Cathedral. That's always a wonderful event. That's really a big night for the priests of the diocese because they gather, they have a meal together, and then they celebrate and renew their priestly vows at that Mass.
And you chose to have it on Monday, where traditionally it was on Holy Thursday day.
It was before morning. On Thursday, but it's always been Monday here as long as I've been here. Mm-hmm. And under Bishop Smith's tenure also on Monday. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when it changed from Holy Thursday. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Bishop Reese did, but I know Bishop Smith had it on Monday. And, you know, I never attended a Chrism Mass until I became bishop.
Really?
I never went to. I always thought it was for diocesan priests.
Oh, okay.
But I encourage all the religious and everybody to join together because we all profess our priestly vows on that day, renew them on that day, which is wonderful to do that together. And also celebrate the anniversaries of priests who are 25 years or 50 years in the priesthood, which is a nice opportunity to acknowledge them in the presence of their peers, their brothers.
And
seminarians come to that Mass, and the lay people come. There's it's a good well-attended Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been live-streamed over the years, and will be again, I think, this year. But I'm so happy to see so many of the lay people attending that Mass, the faithful, because it is a Mass for priests, but it's not just for priests. The priests are there for them.
Right.
And the oils that we bless are the oils that the priests use for the people's sacramental life. So it's really a very special. Well,
and that's obviously why they call it the Chrism Mass.
Yeah, Chrism Mass, that's right. And Holy Thursday, I'll be at St. John's the Baptist Church in Allentown. That Mass is at 6. Then I go back to the cathedral for Good Friday, and the Good Friday at the cathedral is at 12 noon. It's probably one of the earlier ones in the diocese, and that'll be well attended. And then Holy Saturday, I will be at Our Lady of Good Counsel in West Trenton. That's at 7:30, and I ask all the parishes, as the rubrics require, not to hold vigil masses before 7:30. You know, sometimes that's a bit of a...
It's supposed to be after sunset, right?
It's after sunset. Yeah. It's, you know, not everybody follows it, you know, but at this point I'm tired of chasing around. You know, I put it out there. Here's the time.
Right.
Don't do it before this time.
Right.
I hope that they cooperate. Then Easter Vigil, 7:30, Good Counsel. Then I have two Masses at St. Paul's in Princeton. On Easter Day, I always used to go to the prison, but the prison became a very difficult. The staff there became very difficult and very unpleasant to deal with.
Really?
So
you would do Christmas Day too, wouldn't you? Do it at the prison?
And I didn't do Christmas this year either.
Yeah,
I just said, well, you know, if they're going to be so unpleasant, then I'm just not going to go. Not going to approach. I feel
what
bad.
What was their issue? Just curious. What was
there?
Just not cooperative. Tough to get in.
You know, it's just they make a big deal about everything, and you know the rules seem to change every year. Poor Sister Elizabeth and Sister Loretta, the faithful servants, they've been so faithful there, and even they are not treated well. So I told Sister, I said, Sister, you know, there are other places I can go and other places I can be.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for the residents that they can't enjoy having Mass on those days.
Yeah,
you know, the part of the problem. I think the Christmas and Easter are not visiting days. So that's the thing that makes me feel bad because you know I'm the visitor.
Right, right.
With the 30 or 40 guys who come, but. It's just one of those things, you know. Mm-hmm. I wish them well. I know many of them listen to our radio show, yeah, and mm-hmm. I send greetings out to them and prayers. I pray for them all the time, and I'm mindful of them all the time. Mm-hmm. But it just has become a difficult situation.
So you'll be at St. Paul's Easter Sunday?
I'll be at St. Paul's for the 8:30 and the 10. The 10 is the big choir mass, mm-hmm. and usual mass. They're down to one priest there now, the pastor. We have a new pastor. Mm-hmm. New administrator there, Father Chris Dayton. So he's got a lot of masses, so I'm right down the street, so I figured I'd help him out. No problem
right.
there. So
right.
that's a great schedule. This coming Sunday, March the 3rd, I'll be over at St. John Newman Church in Mount Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
They have just got a brand new altar. And so I'm going to consecrate and dedicate the altar there on Sunday. So I'll be there for Mass and mm-hmm. to visit with the folks over there. I'm looking forward to that. There's a lot going on. Tomorrow, March the 2nd, there is a young adult retreat. And, you know, you can get a lot of this, all of this information really by going to the diocese website mm-hmm. or the Monitor mm-hmm. website.
Mm-hmm.
And those who may be interested in attending that young adult retreat who have not yet signed up or registered, you can get the registration information right off the monitor.
Is that at St. Luke's?
It's going to be at St. Luke's, mm-hmm. down at Tom's River.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be very, very nice. Tomorrow also we're having a synod session.
Yeah, where are we in that process now with the synod?
Well, that's a good question. it seems to be a little different every day. But the synod will resume, the second part of the synod, this mm-hmm. coming October,
mm-hmm.
pretty much the whole month of October, actually, as it was last year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, I don't know whether it's the same folks going or not. I presume it's the same folks going. Wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to have all different cast of characters there.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll continue their deliberations and conversations again on this notion of listening and journeying together.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finished, they had a preliminary report that they issued, and this secretariat for the synod asked that there be some continuity in the dioceses throughout the world. So there'll be kind of a second session for the dioceses, and they ask them, they have two or three sessions and go through the report and mm-hmm. see what people have heard mm-hmm. and what they want to say about some of the different points that have been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
So ours will be tomorrow, Saturday, March 2nd, at St. David the King Parish over in West Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the parish has a 9 o'clock Mass, so everybody's welcome to attend the Mass. And the second session will begin at 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
And the session will be chaired by Terry Ginther, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Terry Ginther, who's the chancellor
mm-hmm.
and the executive director for Pastoral Life and Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And she's arranged with note takers and facilitators to be present for that session so that we can gather whatever comments come up.
Mm-hmm.
The point of these is really to make sure that the synod in Rome hears mm-hmm. from the people.
Yeah.
And so we gather that, we make a report, and that report will be sent in. And then there will be an online session on March the 7th, and mm-hmm. that'll be in the evening from 7 to 9. So mm-hmm. just go to the Monitor or the Diocesan website, and you'll get the information how to access that for those who would like to participate
okay.
online. They can't come during the day mm-hmm. or on the weekend, mm-hmm. but they can participate in the evening.
Well,
so,
good.
So those will be two good sessions. We have on the 14th of March a catechist's chat. It's Denise Contino is our director of Catechesis in the Diocese has prepared, and this is going to be online. It's kind of a little session to talk about prayer and family life and how to get families more engaged in prayer together. Mm-hmm. So it should be good. That's going to be at 7 o'clock on March the 14th. Again, go to the Monitor or the Diocesan website for information about that. We have the Blue Mass coming up, mm-hmm. and that's always an occasion where that I'm very, very happy to celebrate. You know, while I was sick, I got a number of calls from Colonel Pat Callahan, the head of the state police, mm-hmm. just to see how I'm doing.
Oh,
I'm feeling really very, very thoughtful of him to do that, mm-hmm. and I appreciate. But I care very much for our law enforcement. I pray for everyone in law enforcement mm-hmm. every single day.
Yeah.
And I certainly look forward to the Blue Mass where I have an opportunity to celebrate and to speak to the law enforcement folks.
And where will that be?
That'll be over at the Coe Cathedral.
At the Coe Cathedral. Mm-hmm.
And that's April the 4th, mm-hmm. and it's at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Easter week. Or 10:30. Mm-hmm. 10:30 on April the 4th. And everyone's welcome. I mean, the invitation is to send to everyone. And there'll be a lot of representation from the various police folks throughout the mm-hmm. four counties of the diocese, and some come from other dioceses yeah. as well. So mm-hmm. it'll be good. You know, I'm a chief of police. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Where's your badge?
I'm an honorary. I have it. It's in the car. I'm an honorary chief of police. I was very kindly inducted by the Chief of Police Association of New Jersey and made an honorary chief of police. So
very nice.
Yeah, it is very. It was a nice honor, and I appreciate it mm-hmm. very much. We have. Coming up, you know, we have a holy year every 25
yes.
years. The church has a holy year, which invites pilgrims to come to Rome. Mm-hmm. And they have the holy door at St. Peter's Basilica and special indulgences involved. And that's going to be 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And the Holy See has asked for all of the dioceses throughout the world to be conscious of that and to help prepare for the Holy Year by having a year of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And this week they sent out a whole bunch of information and resources for use in the diocese for a year of prayer leading up to the Holy Year. The Holy Year will begin in January the 1st of 2025,
mm-hmm.
but the preparation, I think, begins on Ascension Thursday of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will pray together as a church that those pilgrims who have the good fortune to be able to go to Rome mm-hmm. and participate will have a fruitful time, and that mm-hmm. it'll be a fruitful time for the whole church. I'll speak more about it.
Yeah. I understand Rome is really preparing as far as renovations, and I mean, there's a lot of money being
spent.
There's a lot
going on in Rome.
They're expecting a lot of people in Rome.
I think so. And you know, you could see it when you
mm-hmm.
were there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of renovations have already occurred,
mm-hmm.
Was very visible to me as I.
And what is the purpose of declaring a holy year? Why is there a holy year?
I think it dates back to like the 1300s. And it was a special year of grace,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity for people to pray more intently, more intensely, to ask for God's blessing on the church, that people might who were not Catholic might consider becoming part of the church
mm-hmm.
community,
mm-hmm.
To give people an opportunity to take advantage of the sacramental system, the sacramental life of the church, and things of that nature. It's a spiritual.
And a refresh.
Refresh, yeah. Renewal, refresh.
Supposed to forgive debt, too, aren't the big... They supposed to,
What's that?
Aren't they supposed to be forgiving debt? Is that one of the criteria they encourage to forgive debt?
Yeah, that might be one that they encourage. I don't know how many follow it, but it's a beautiful thing. And as we get closer to Ascension Thursday, I'll say a little bit more about that, get into more
mm-hmm.
detail
mm-hmm.
with that. So those are the main things going on. We are in the midst of, as you know, how can you not know? An election year for a presidential
mm-hmm.
election.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of back and forth on the news, especially in these days.
Mm.
Uh, about that. So the Bishops' Conference publishes every year a document, Faithful Citizenship, in which it outlines some things that it encourages people to think about as they approach the voting booth.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't tell people who to vote for.
Right.
The church doesn't do that, and it shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes through some of the issues that people face. This past week, we got the bishops got a notice from the Office of General Counsel of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops indicating that that document will be coming out and trying to explain why it is that interventions in political campaigns, direct interventions, are really prohibited in the church. And one of the main reasons is because of the tax status.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you notice, we don't directly, as a religion or as a church, benefit from taxes.
Right.
We benefit from taxes through other aspects of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But any indication of using our religious affiliation to try to persuade or embrace particular partisan politics or politicians is not permitted.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's funny, Bishop, you say that. But so often, especially during election years, you do see politicians speaking at non-Catholic.
That amazes me. And they get away with it.
I know. I don't understand that.
But let it happen at a Catholic church.
Right.
And they're right down our throats, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I agree with you. And people say that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, how come this particular...
Right, the local Baptist church, and there's a politician,
there
you know, there's a candidate.
There.
Right?
Yeah, and... But they watch us, they scrutinize us a little bit more carefully.
Yeah, hey, yeah.
Talk about religious freedom, right?
Right.
Where's our freedom?
Right.
You know, there's.
Right. But the church's responsibility really to form the conscience of the voter. Not
that's
the,
really what
right.
what it should be. And
right.
I say this to priests all the time. I said, don't get up in the pulpit and start endorsing this candidate or going against that candidate. Mm-hmm. Talk about the moral teachings of the church.
Right.
That's much more enduring and much more important.
Mm-hmm.
Educate people's conscience.
Right.
That's what we do as a church.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. We don't make the decisions for them.
Right.
And that's really what the Bishops' Conference is really just trying to emphasize here, because we don't want to put into jeopardy the good things that we are able to get as a result of our taxes. And there are good things that we get.
That's right.
And so we have to be very, very careful. Yeah. So once that document comes out, I'll speak a little bit more in more detail about it to the folks. So,
how about as far as you mentioned the campus ministry and a lot of young people coming to Mass on Ash Wednesday? Are any of our pastors or any of our parishes seeing trends with these young people who you hear so much about these days? You know, as the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, you know, these people who have no formal religion. Are we seeing a trend, a return to the church by these young folks?
I can't say that I've heard specific things, but I can tell you that in my experience, I'm not a pastor of a parish, but I certainly visit enough parishes, that when I celebrate masses in parishes, certain parishes seem to be drawing a large number of young people. And I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see young couples with children attending Mass. And I always try to stand outside the church after Mass when I can.
Right.
Sometimes it's not possible, but most times it is possible. And I'm always delighted to see how many young people actually are there. So... could I call it a trend? I don't know that I could call it a trend.
And the reason I ask is because Cheryl and her, again, she works at a parish up in Metuchen Diocese. But this year, two parishes are combining their confirmation because there aren't enough kids in one parish for the bishop. You know, the bishop come to have to do the both of them. They're combining them because of a lack of number of students.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because you wonder what's happening with the millennials who are now parents and the Gen Xers who are becoming parents. What are they doing with their kids? And
I don't know. You hear different things and you don't always know what to believe. We haven't run into that situation. But what I have noticed is the number of young people being confirmed is lesser now than it was even 14 years ago when I first started doing confirmations. Right. And I have, you know, because it takes so much effort to travel around the diocese. It's a big diocese.
Yes.
And to travel around the diocese and multiple confirmations. I told the pastors, you know, after COVID, during COVID, a lot of the pastors I delegated to give confirmation in their parishes.
Yes.
And some of them liked it and asked me if they could continue. And I said, sure, if you want, I can. I have the canon law gives me that right to delegate. But I also found that in some of these parishes where they only have 8, 10 young people being confirmed, that I almost automatically give delegation to the pastor. Usually if it's under 20, you know, it's better to let the pastor do it. I try to make sure that I get to the parishes every 3 years. So if there's, as I say, not every parish gives confirmation every year, but the ones that do, and some of them, you know, are like 200, 300 kids. So they're healthy, good-sized confirmation classes.
Yeah.
Some of them are not. So the only way I can answer, I really am not giving you a good answer to your question, but the only thing I can tell you is the thing I've noticed is not as many confirmations as when I first came.
Yeah, which probably speaks to that again.
It could be, could be another way of judging it. But I do see a lot of young people, and I will tell you when I visit the college age, when I visit the college campuses or high school situations where I do have a chance to have a little bit of conversation. Sometimes you go to a high school and they have a panel of kids there or the student council. They do ask good questions. And so I have a good feeling with the young people who do come. So I'm not exactly sure. Another thing that I've noticed over the years is the number of people who are not having funerals for their parents or for the older folks or people who die, you know, that they just have something in the funeral parlor or something at the cemetery and they skip the mass. Even if their parents were devoted to mass or daily mass goers, they, you know, and they'll say very directly, you know, it really doesn't mean that much to me. And it's sad.
Yeah.
It just saddens me. So I've noticed that. And another thing another way that we can gauge is every year in October, we call it the October count, obviously.
Right.
But we have the ushers take a count on particular Sundays to just get a sense of whether the numbers are up or the numbers are down. The numbers right now are getting closer to where they were before the pandemic.
Oh, that's good.
So that's good news.
Yeah, that's good.
Collections are also okay, as they were before the pandemic, or getting close to that. So that's another indicator.
Yeah.
So,
well,
that's not specifically young people, but it's, you know,
right.
I encourage them to come. You know, there's so much beauty in the truth of the gospel and all that we have to offer.
Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, my father taught catechism to the public school kids.
Oh, did he?
But we call CCD.
Yeah, CCD.
But he would teach on a high school level. After confirmation, they would still come to catechism class, these young people. They were still coming. I mean, the parents would, there were classes through high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We usually confirm around ninth grade.
Yeah.
Sometimes eighth grade. And the reason that we do that is to keep them a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to get something out of it, they're going to get a sacrament, they'll come.
Right.
But a lot of times after confirmation is given, you see a drop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the statistics were done. I say this every once in a while in confirmation, you know, that, you know, about 5% of those confirmed during the week are back in the church on Sunday.
Yeah. So and the onus is on the parents, though, and that, you know, I mean,
well,
the parents.
I mean, you have to call it for what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents made us go to church.
There was no whether, option. Not
whether
optional.
You wanted it or not,
that's
you know,
right.
You went.
That's right.
And you know, we had a young mass. What would you call it? School mass,
mm-hmm.
on Sunday. It was 8:45.
Yep.
We never went to that.
Oh no!
No,
oh,
we always went to the 6 o'clock mass.
Oh.
6 a.m. Sunday morning, wow. Every Sunday, all my life. So going to mass was became part of your DNA,
yeah,
after,
okay,
a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, sometimes people, you know, they get out of high school and maybe drift away. They, mm-hmm. went to college, they drift away. Mm-hmm. But the minute they got married and had children of their own, they were back in the pews,
right.
And that's a. Right. I guess that's some sign of hope. You know, I say that to parents all the time. Oh, my kids don't go to church anymore.
Yeah.
And I said, don't hassle them. Give them good example.
Mm-hmm.
Show them that you love them and show them that it's important to you.
Right.
I said, and that's right. The way.
Yeah.
So it's a different world.
It is. It is. But you hope that, you know, there's not a domino effect. You know, when I speak of the millennial generation, they're the parents now. They're the ones raising kids.
Parents.
And they're the ones who, a lot of them, are not coming to Mass. So their children are not. They may put them through the sacramental programs, but they don't go to Mass. They just go through the ritual, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Not everybody, obviously, but it is. It seems to be the case with many people that I know. And, you know, unfortunate. Yeah. So.
Well, we hope that if it is a trend... and it's a negative trend. We hope that it turns around, and the way that will happen is if we who are believers and we who are people who for whom the faith is important, we let that be known and we let that be seen by the way we live and what we say and what we do.
Yeah,
we give the example. Witness. What does the word witness mean? It means something very very important.
Yeah.
And the Greek word for witness is martyr.
But you mentioned some parishes do have a high young person attendance.
They do.
Interesting to see what they're doing to bring these young people in.
And this is where I give credit to my priests. You know, they make the leadership makes a difference.
Yeah,
the priests make a difference. Mm-hmm. If they make the effort to engage the young, to talk to the young, to make sure that their homilies, so important, the homilies are... have something to hold on to and something to take away with, and that's a very good thing. But the priests make a big difference in a parish.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be good to see.
But and that's why we need good priests.
Now, we'll probably talk about it later on in the year, but I know you have we have diaconate ordination in May, and then...
Yeah, I just did lector acolyte. It's part of the stages of becoming a deacon.
Mm-hmm.
I did that last week, and we have, I think, 12 permanent deacons work in the parishes, and I have, I think, 2 transitional deacons who will be ordained to the priesthood, and I have 2 young men who will become priests this year also, so that's also very good.
Okay, well, good to hear. Just about out of time, Bishop, but again, want to thank you for being with us today, and good to have you back. Glad
good
you're feeling
be
better, and...
As I said, it's good to be seen, and... Better to be seen than viewed.
Very good. God bless you, Bishop. We'll talk to you next month.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.